The great fish moved silently through the night water, propelled by short sweeps of its crescent tail. The mouth was open just enough to permit a rush of water over the gills. There was little other motion, an occasional correction of the apparently aimless course by the slight raising or lowering of a pectoral fin, as a bird changes direction by dipping one wing and lifting the other. The eyes were sightless in the black, and the other senses transmitted nothing extraordinary to the small, primitive brain. The fish might have been asleep, save for the movement dictated by countless millions of years of instinctive continuity. Lacking the flotation bladder common to other fish and the fluttering flaps to push oxygen-bearing water through its gills, it survived only by moving. Once stopped, it would sink to the bottom and die of anoxia. The land seemed almost as dark as the water, for there was no moon. All that separated sea from shore was a long, straight stretch of beach, so white that it shone. From a house behind the glass-splotched dunes, lights cast yellow glimmers on the sand. The front door to the house opened, and a man and woman stepped out onto the wooden porch. They stood for a moment, staring at the sea, embraced quickly, and scampered down the few steps onto the sand. The man was drunk, and he stumbled on the bottom step. The woman laughed and took his hand, and together they ran to the beach. "First a swim," said the woman, "to clear your head." "Forget my head," said the man. Giggling, he fell backwards onto the sand, pulling the woman down with him. They fumbled with each other's clothing, twined limbs around limbs, and thrashed with urgent ardor on the cold sand. Afterward, the man lay back and closed his eyes. The woman looked at him and smiled. "Now, how about that swim?" she said. "You go ahead. I'll wait for you here." The woman rose and walked to where the gentle surf washed over her ankles. The water was colder than the night air, for it was only mid-June. The woman called back, "You sure you don't want to come?" But there was no answer from the sleeping man. She backed up a few steps, then ran at the water. At first, her strides were long and graceful, but then a small wave crashed onto her knees. She faltered, regained her footing, and flung herself over the next waist-high wave. The water was only up to her hips, so she stood, pushed the hair out of her eyes, and continued walking until the water covered her shoulders. There she began to swim, with the jerky head-above-water stroke of the untutored. 100 yards offshore, the fish sensed a change in the sea's rhythm. It did not see the woman, nor yet did it smell her. Running within the length of its body were a series of thin canals filled with mucus and dotted with nerve endings, and those nerves detected vibrations and signaled the brain. The fish turned toward shore. The woman continued to swim away from the beach, stopping now and then to check her position by the light shining above the house. The tide was slack, so she had not moved up or down the beach, but she was tiring. So she rested for a moment, treading water, and then started for shore. Vibrations were stronger now, and the fish recognized prey. The sweeps of its tail quickened, thrusting the giant body forward with a speed that agitated the tiny, phosphorescent animals in the water and caused them to glow, casting a mantle of sparks over the fish. The fish closed on the woman and hurtled past, 12 feet to the side and 6 feet below the surface. The woman felt only a wave of pressure that seemed to lift her up in the water and ease her down again. She stopped swimming and held her breath. Feeling nothing further, she resumed her lurching stroke. The fish smelled her now, and the vibrations, erratic and sharp, signaled distress. The fish began to circle close to the surface. Its dorsal fin broke water, and its tail, thrashing back and forth, cut the glossy surface with a hiss. A series of tremors shook the body. For the first time, the woman felt fear, though she did not know why. Adrenaline shot through her trunk and her limbs, generating a tingling heat and urging her to swim faster. She guessed that she was 50 yards from shore. She could see the line of white foam where the waves broke on the beach. She saw the lights in the house, and for a comforting moment, she thought she saw someone pass by one of the windows. The fish was about 40 feet away from the woman, off to the side when it turned suddenly to the left, dropped entirely below the surface, and with 2 quick thrusts of its tail was upon her. At first, the woman thought she had snagged her leg on a rock or a piece of floating wood. There was no initial pain, only one violent tug on her right leg. She reached down to touch her foot, treading water with her left leg to keep her head up, feeling in the blackness with her left hand. She could not find her foot. She reached higher on her leg, and then she was overcome by a rush of nausea and dizziness. Her groping fingers had found a nub of bone and tattered flesh. She knew that the warm, pulsing flow over her fingers in the chill water was her own blood. Pain and panic struck together. The woman threw her head back and screamed a guttural cry of terror. The fish had moved away. It swallowed the woman's limb without chewing. Bones and meat passed down the massive gullet in a single spasm. Now the fish turned again, homing on the stream of blood flushing from the woman's femoral artery, a beacon as clear and true as a lighthouse on a cloudless night. This time the fish attacked from below. It hurtled up under the woman, jaws agape. The great conical head struck her like a locomotive, knocking her up out of the water. The jaws snapped shut around her torso, crushing bones and flesh and organs into a jelly. The fish, with the woman's body in its mouth, smashed down on the water with a thunderous splash, spewing foam and blood and phosphorescence in a gaudy shower. Below the surface, the fish shook its head from side to side, its serrated triangular teeth sawing through what little sinew still resisted. The corpse fell apart. The fish swallowed, then turned to continue feeding. Its brain still registered the signals of nearby prey. The water was laced with blood and shreds of flesh, and the fish could not sort out the signal from the substance. It cut back and forth through the dissipating cloud of blood, opening and closing its mouth, seining for a random morsel. But by now, most of the pieces of the corpse had dispersed. A few sank slowly, coming to rest on the sandy bottom, where they moved lazily in the current. A few drifted away just below the surface, floating in the surge that ended in the surf. The man awoke, shivering in the early morning cold. His mouth was sticky and dry, and his wakening belch tasted of bourbon and corn. The sun had not yet risen, but a line of pink on the eastern horizon told him that daybreak was near. The stars still hung faintly in the lightning sky. The man stood and began to dress. He was annoyed that the woman had not woken him when she went back to the house, and he found it curious that she had left her clothes on the beach. He picked them up and walked to the house. He tiptoed across the porch and gently opened the screen door, remembering that it screeched when yanked. The living room was dark and empty, littered with half-empty glasses, ashtrays, and dirty plates. He walked across the living room, turned right down a hall, past two closed doors. The door to the room he shared with the woman was open, and a bedside light was on. Both beds were made. He tossed the woman's clothes on one of the beds, then returned to the living room and switched on a light. Both couches were empty. There were two more bedrooms in the house. The owners slept in one. Two other house guests occupied the other. As quietly as possible, the man opened the door to the first bedroom. There were two beds, each obviously containing only one person. He closed the door and moved to the next room. The host and hostess were asleep on each side of a king-size bed. The man closed the door and went back to his room to find his watch. It was nearly 5. He sat on one bed and stared at the bundle of clothes on the other. He was certain the woman wasn't in the house. There had been no other guests for dinner, so unless she had met someone on the beach while he slept, she couldn't have gone off with anyone. And even if she had, he thought, she probably would have taken at least some of her clothes. Only then did he permit his mind to consider the possibility of an accident. Very quickly, the possibility became a certainty. He returned to the host's bedroom, hesitated for a moment beside the bed, and then softly placed his hand on his shoulder. "Jack," he said, patting the shoulder. "Hey, Jack." The man sighed and opened his eyes. "What?" It's me, Tom. I hate like hell to wake you up, but I think we may have a problem. What's the problem? Have you seen Chrissy? What do you mean, have I seen Chrissy? She's with you. No, she isn't. I mean, I can't find her. Jack sat up and turned down a light. His wife stirred and covered her head with a sheet. Jack looked at his watch. Jesus Christ, it's 5 a.m. You can't find your date. I know, said Tom. I'm sorry. Do you remember when you saw her last? Sure, I remember. She said you were going for a swim, and you both went out on the porch. When did you see her last? She was on the beach, and then I fell asleep. You mean she didn't come back? Not that I saw, at least not before we went to bed, and that was around 1. Well, I found her clothes. Where'd you find them, on the beach? Yes. You looked in the living room? Tom nodded. And in the Henkels' room. The Henkels' room? Tom blushed. I haven't known her that long. For all I know, she could be a little weird. So could the Henkels. I mean, I'm not suggesting anything. I just wanted to check the whole house before I woke you up. So what do you think? What I'm beginning to think, said Tom, is maybe she had an accident. Maybe she drowned. Jack looked at him for a moment, then glanced again at his watch. I don't know what time the police in this town go to work, but I guess this is as good a time as any to find out.
End of chapter 1.
Imagine. my home across the sea to see America and the people who opened up their arms to welcome us to America. We came like children from a far and distant land to see America and the golden sun of freedom. Built it down to us in America.
Students recite every morning. Now, this pledge means something greater, especially for the young men of this country. By law, men have a civic duty to register with Selective Service when they turn 18. So if you're a young man, do your part to keep America strong. Register with Selective Service. Register online at www.sss.gov or pick up a Selective Service registration card at the post office.
With liberty and justice for all.
Dedicate one to the ladies. Summertime sip, bang, need something to keep you cool. Now summertime sip, bang, need something to keep you cool. Better look out now, though, Dave's got something for you. Tell you what it is, I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. Oh my, my, I'm your ice cream man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on a second, baby. I got put my banana Dixie cups, all flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on one more. Well, I'm usually passing by just about 11 o'clock. I never stop, I'm usually passing by just around 11 o'clock. And if you let me cool you one time, you'll be my regular stop. All right, boys.
Now put my What? Well, let me roll up onto the sidewalk and take a look. darling, iris is sweet, lily is lovely, blossom's a treat. Of all the sweethearts a guy could meet, when I finally chose an American beauty rose. Camellia's tragic, she can't be mine. Magnolia's magic, it makes Maggie shine. Laurel will hug you, orchid's divine. Still I finally chose an American beauty rose. She's clingier than ivy, and she's zingier than black-eyed Susan, springier than Maybelle in June. I'm daffy as a daffodil, it's laughable the way I thrill when roses are in bloom. Pansy is pretty, willow is tall, violet's kisses, two lips recall. How can I choose one? I love them all. Still I finally chose an American beauty rose. Pretty, willow is tall, violet's kisses, two lips recall. How can I choose one? I love them all. Still I finally chose an American beauty rose.
We'll be right back. said goodbye to the family, said goodbye to the friends. And with the pop dreams in her heads and very little money in her hands. Some are black and some are white, and they ain't too proud to sleep on the floor tonight. The blind faith in Jesus, you know that they just might. Wagon in the USA.
Hey!
R-O-C-K in the USA. R-O-C-K in the USA.
cigarettes, and this is where the pines and walked off to look for America. Kathy, I said as we boarded the Greyhound in Pittsburgh. Michigan seems like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. Said be careful, his bow tie is really a camera. Toss me a cigarette, I think there's one in my raincoat. We smoked the last one an hour ago. So I looked at the scenery, she read her magazine, and the moon rose over an open field. Kathy, I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and aching, and I don't know. The cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, they've all come to look for America. All come to look for America. All come to look for America.
Majesties. Whoa. America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He gave me a crown like the, yes he did, heavy brotherhood from sea.
America,
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 I love you, America. You see, my God, he done shed his face on thee. And you ought to love him for it, cause he crowned that good. He told me he would, every brotherhood
from sea.
I'm tired. plastic bag, drifting through the wind, wanting to start again. Do you ever feel so paper thin, like a house of cards, one blow from caving in? Chance for you, 'cause there's a spark in you. You just gotta ignite the light and let it shine. Just own the night like the 4th of July. 'Cause baby, you're a firework. Come on, show 'em what you worth. Make 'em go. Shoot across the sky, baby, you're a firework. Come on, let your colors burst. Make them go You're gonna leave them all in You don't have to feel like a wasted space. You're original, cannot be replaced. If you only knew what the future holds, after a hurricane comes a rainbow. Maybe a reason why all the doors are closed, so you could open one that leads you to the perfect road. Like a lightning bolt, your heart will glow, and when it's time you'll know. You just gotta ignite the light and live.
Hey everybody, happy 4th of July. My name's Chris Earle. You've been listening to Time Travel on WMFO in Medford, Massachusetts.